Hello everyone, this is Michi and welcome back to the Manic Manor podcast. So for today's episode, we are going to be talking about another nightclub fire. Now, we previously had talked about the Station nightclub fire, and that's posted on YouTube as well as on anywhere that you listen to your podcast. But in the YouTube section, there have been quite a few comments. It's gained quite a bit of popularity here lately. So thank you to everybody who has been watching, commenting, giving their support. I greatly appreciate it. One of those users is YouTube user Renovre3440. And they said that if the Station nightclub fire was one thing, then Club Sunset was another. And so, boy, were they right. That is what we are going to be covering today, is another nightclub fire, the Club Sunset or Club 57. So, looking into it, we're going to just dive right in. The Club Sunset came to be as a result of three friends who wanted to create a dance hall in the area of rural France. The club was constructed and was only open for a few months before the fire that we're going to talk about today occurred. And when they started to uncover and investigate what had happened, there were a lot of corners that were cut in the construction, and there's a lot of similarities between what happened at Station and what happened with Club Sunset. And when I got to looking into it more, I started to notice that Club Sunset and Station Nightclub, of course, are listed as some of the deadliest nightclub fires in the history of the world. They're kind of, I think, like, Station was like number 10 and Club Sunset was number 9 from the list that I looked at. So, the club, like I said, was set in a rather isolated place, about 1.5 to 2 miles away from a city called Saint-Laurent-du-Pont, and finally opened its doors to the public in April of 1970. Now, the outside of the club had a high entryway turnstile that looked like something you would see in a business place in like the 60s and 70s. The building itself looked like a typical large building. The main ground floor when you got inside, however, was completely stark different to what was inside. The ground floor had a bar and a restaurant and had a massive dance floor and a stage for people to party at. Leading up to the second story, there was a single metal spiral staircase that would take you up, and there'd be alcoves and stuff that were up there on the second floor where people could sit, enjoy their drinks, and just dance the night away. Now, the way that they decorated this club was with a bunch of papier-mâché and a bunch of plastic, and this was like all over the walls, the ceilings. I'm pretty sure there were tables that had papier-mâché and plastic decorations on it as well. And anybody who knows, papier-mâché and plastic is not necessarily the safest type of decoration material, as it is a considerable flame hazard. But this didn't seem to matter for any of the club owners. They wanted to open up a club for a generation of people who wanted to enjoy their life and party, because after all, this was the time that the baby boomers were teenagers, and they were rebellious and just wanting to let loose and have fun. And because of that, the club very quickly became a popular place for teenagers and young adults alike to hang out, especially for such a rural area in France. People would come from nearby towns such as Chambéry and Grenoble, places that were like up to 20 miles away from where this place was located. There were people coming in to party. And the club reigned popular from April until October of 1970. And this is where we see the evening of October 30th into the morning of October 31st. There were many people that were gathered there that night, all between the ages of like 14 to 27. Other places say that the ranges were like 15 or 16 to like 30. But either way, there was a lot of teenagers, a lot of young adults that were there that night. The group that was gathering was rather massive because they were going to be having a live performance at the club that night by a band named Storm. They were up and coming, they came from Paris, and they were covering all sorts of songs that were popular during the time while also performing some of their own original songs. This was supposed to be a night to remember, but would end up in a complete and horrible nightmare. Because of this, with the band coming in and it being like this extravagant party. Even though there were other entrances at the side of the building, and I think in the back of the building as well, managers that were there decided that they were going to lock every single entry slash exit way up to keep people from free riding or sneaking into the club without paying. Everybody would have to go up front, pay a fee, and then walk in through those turnstiles. Now, with everybody in, they were partying, having a good time. The club was bumping all through the night and into the early hours of October 31st, and it was approaching about 1:40 in the morning. People were still dancing, smoking, drinking, having a blast, unaware of what was about to happen. Now, what is believed is that somebody that was on the upper part of the club was lighting a cigarette when a lit match that they had in their hand dropped and it hit one of the polyester cushions that was in the club. Instantly, the cushion ignited and heavy smoke and flames started to rise. And because the club was also decorated with all these plastics and paper mache, when the flames started to grow, it caught onto this material and it fed it quite like wildfire, feeding a frenzy within a matter of moments. There was one person who survived this incident, saying that they remember watching people trying to put out the flames, but it was to no use. So he calmly started to go down to the main level and tell people that they needed to get out due to the fire, and this is where panic began, as there was only one exit, and it was the main one through that massive turnstile. And rather quickly, the entire club became engulfed in flames. It was so fast that the band was still playing when the decorations on the ceiling above them started to, you know, set ablaze. Now, one of the owners of the club was named Gilbert Bass, and he was there that night in his office, along with the other two managers who were in the club as well, when the fire took over the place. He had been working, and the alarm bell sounded, so he went out and was quoted as saying he heard people screaming fire, and saw people running with their clothes on fire, and he had to take a step back. Now, one thing about the club is that, with it being as far out as it was, it would take a long time to get to any kind of rescue squad, and there was not a working phone that was on this premises at the time. So he claimed he ran out and sped off in his car to alert the police or try to find somebody who could, you know, call the police for him or call the fire department. But help would come too late. By the time that the firefighters got there, the building was already engulfed so heavily, and there were still, like, well over 100 people trapped inside this building. People were choking and unable to see, and they were trying to make their way for the main entrance to get to safety, but with the sheer amount of people trying to force themselves and save themselves, it wound up locking up the turnstile, and escape became futile. When the fire trucks were trying to put out the flames, the only thing that could be done was just extinguishing the fire. It was so bad to the point that even the first responders there said that there wasn't anything they could do for those people that were trapped inside. So can you just imagine the horror of trying to get out and the only exit that you have is a locked up turnstile, and you come to this realization as you're like choking on the smoke and flames are like burning at your skin that there's no hope. And it would be 5 in the morning before they finally put out this building. And at that time, the club was nothing more than a shell of destruction, charred beyond belief. It now became a recovery mission for the bodies of the people who could not make it out. There were only about 30 to 40 survivors that night, and a total of 146 people perished as a result of the fire, either directly due to smoke inhalation or burning, or just succumbing to their wounds in the hospital later on. This death toll is one of the worst in France and is in the top 10, like I said, of the deadliest club fires in the world. Gilbert Bass, out of the three, you know, club owners, he was the sole surviving owner. And not only that, but the entire band that was playing that night perished along with other patrons. Now, the nearby town hall in Saint-Laurent-du-Pont set up a temporary morgue due to the sheer size of this catastrophe, and many of the bodies couldn't initially be identified because of how badly burned they were. So officials had to rely on personal items that were recovered to aid in their identification process. And they would use wallets, bracelets, necklaces, watches, or whatever they could to try to help parents or loved ones determine if it was their loved one that was stuck in that fire and had perished. Now, within the next 2 days, there was a mass funeral service held for the victims at a local gymnasium, and there's a picture where it's just rows of coffins. Those who were able to be identified were soon, you know, given back to their families, to where the families could put them in grave, like, proper burials. And out of all of the people that perished, there was 19 people who were never able to be identified. And because of that, they were given a dedicated plot in a local church. The aftermath of this saw anger and heartbreak. It surged throughout the community and France as a whole. There were rules and regulations that should have prevented this. So why did this happen? Why did this building burn down, and why did these people lose their lives? People were demanding for justice. There were protests that were ensued. Every single person that you could think of was demanding an answer. And it didn't take a very deep search when they started the investigation to see that the club opened fairly quickly, and there were such fatal opening flaws that there was never an actual safety inspection at the club, and this was a lawful requirement, and somehow it was able to be circumvented and neglected and straight up ignored. There was also a thing where there wasn't any paperwork showing that there should be a maximum amount of people in the club, and this is something that also seemed to be required. There was nothing showing. The decorations, like we said, paper mache and plastic, that was illegal as well because of how flammable they were. And not only that, the building needed to have a minimum of 3 access doors, but there was only 1 on the night that this happened. During the investigation with what was left of the building, they discovered that during construction, one of the interior doors, so there was an extra door, it had been sealed off, no access whatsoever, just permanently closed off. 2 doors were locked, shut, and they were blocked, leaving just the 1 door. There also wasn't an exit for the higher floor, so, like, there wasn't a balcony that these people could have gone to if they were on the second floor to try to get to safety. So they literally had to, like, single file down this very narrow spiral staircase or jump off the side. Another issue that was found was there was no firefighting equipment that was in the building, even though that was another requirement. Now, while it wasn't an actual requirement, having a telephone on the premises would have been extremely beneficial for this situation. And at the end of the investigation, they found out that this entire club was operating illegally. They never got the green light to open. So, charges were brought, not only against the owner Charles Bass, they also brought it against the mayor of Saint-Laurent-du-Pont as well for allowing this to happen, for allowing the club to open, and they also filed suits and charges against several of the contractors who had worked on the building. Now, the mayor, he actually ended up being suspended from his job as a result of this due to the public outrage and their opinion that he shouldn't have been in office. They, the charges they brought were manslaughter, negligence, and numerous building and safety code violations. Now, at the end of all of this, the mayor, the club owner, and the contractors were all found guilty. Now, the mayor and the contractors, like, as a group, they were sentenced to, like, 15, 13, and 10-month suspended sentences, which doesn't seem a lot considering the gravity of what had happened. The owner, Gilbert, he got a guilty verdict on manslaughter alone and was sentenced to serve 2 years in prison. However, this later got reduced to an 18-month suspended sentence, and he continued to live in the area after this, and it was said that he worked at a paper mill never speaking of the incident again until he died in 2021. Blame ended up being placed on all these officials who seemed to turn a blind eye at the corruptness of what was going on. In total, there was over 68 breaches of safety found in this aftermath. And 54 years later, people are still feeling the pain of this, as it is one of the deadliest nightclub fires in the history of the world. People who did survive were left with this complex PTSD, with some who couldn't even go into crowds or dark places. So even something as simple as going out to a movie theater to enjoy a show, getting in an elevator, or just walking in public was a nightmare for them to live with, because it just reminds them of that day and how they were the ones to survive and all these other people passed, giving them this awful survivor's guilt. Now, 4 years ago, on November 1st, the new mayor of Saint-Laurent-du-Pont commemorated the victims of this fire. They had put up totems near the memorial, and they did this to honor the lives of those lost. And that is the case of the Club Sunset nightclub fire. I want to thank you guys so much for listening into today's episode, and I also want to thank you so much for the support and the sheer amount of patience that you guys have when it comes to me putting these episodes out. If there's any point that I missed or anything that you would like to add on, please feel free to do so. You can comment on YouTube, you can reach out to me via email at manicmanorpodcast@gmail.com. You can also go to Facebook and Instagram as well, Manic Manor Podcast. And if you do feel so inclined, although never necessary, we do have a Patreon set up where you can go and donate if you want to help fund the podcast so we can try to put out, you know, better content and whatnot. But like I said, never necessary. So thank you guys so much. And I do want to say that our next episode that we are going to be covering is an episode that is very close to home for me, as it actually happened in my home state of Tennessee, in Knoxville. We will be talking about the case of Shannon Christian and Christopher Newsom. And that is a very heavy episode, so it probably will take some time to talk about. So I just want to go ahead and put it out there, because there's going to be a lot of triggering aspects in that episode. So until then, I hope you guys have a wonderful day, a wonderful week, and you stay safe out there. Until then, see ya.